Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to The Spectator's Books podcast. I'm Sam Leith, the literary editor of The Spectator, and this week I'm very pleased to be joined by Ian Sansom, a regular critic for our pages and, as it turns out, a great authority on W.H. Auden.
I don't know if the word great authority is.
Which he already disclaimed. Let's put it this way. Ian has spent 25 years or so utterly immersed in Auden and Audeniana, and his new book, which is the result of all this, it's called September the 1st, 1939, Biography of a Poem. So he spent 25 years studying Auden and has now written a book about one of his poems. So what's that about?
Yes. Ian? Well, I mean, it was my intention to write a massive book about Auden's life and work. And then over the years, that was my ambition. And then I realised what my actual grasp might be rather than my reach. And it ended up as just that one. And it just seemed... What seemed possible 25 years ago, I realised a few years ago I was going to have to scale down my ambitions. And also, obviously, because there's the anniversary coming up, 80 years since its first publication, I thought, well, now is the time to turn all of this apparently pointless effort to some, you know, to some consequence.
Anniversary aside, why this one poem? I mean, one of the things that will strike, you know, most readers is, OK, W.H. Auden didn't like this poem of his own. And you, I think, are four lines in before you say, well, this is where the poem begins to go wrong.
Don't you think a poem... Poems are fascinating, not because they're... Like writers. Writers aren't fascinating because they're consistently brilliant. On the contrary, what is fascinating is the kind of intermittency of brilliant. That's what's really exciting and interesting in a poem or a book or in a person. If someone was brilliant the whole time, they would just be utterly tiresome, wouldn't they? So I think that I was attracted to the poem because it's got all of the best of Auden in it and all of the worst of Auden in it. So in that sense, it's a carrier of everything that I might possibly have to say about Auden. And Auden knew that himself. He knew that, he not only came to dislike it, he despised it. He did everything he could to suppress it, get rid of it, try and ensure that nobody read it anymore. So it's got this very odd kind of history where it is a poem that Auden did his best to shun, get rid of, suppress, disown, and yet it's probably his most famous poem. And so apart from maybe Stoppled, you know, Funeral Blues that was in the film. So
yes, Richard Curtis was responsible for one revival of Auden and Osama bin Laden for another.
I draw no conclusions from that at all. But yes, it's an odd... I mean, and that doesn't happen to all poets. They don't always... So there's a kind of... There's that thing with Auden where he... It's like a zombie poem. You cannot put it down. No matter, Auden tried. You know, his executors have tried to kind of obey his wishes and not have it republished. And yet it keeps popping up. And it keeps coming back. You can't kill it off.
So there's a why question here. And the why question could go either way. It's either, why do you think Auden himself particularly hated it? And also, why do you think it particularly bounces back?
Auden hated it, I think, because... I mean, it's a bit easy to divide Auden into two halves, and lots of critics and readers have done this over time. So you've got the Auden of the 30s, the English Auden, who writes this kind of socially engaged political poetry. He's the court poet of the left in England. And then off he goes to America at the beginning of 1939, and this heralds the age of the later Auden, the American Auden, which is much cosier and comfier, and is kind of where he ends up writing poems about, you know, reading the New York Times and looking in the obituary pages, and it all becomes a little bit sort of charming. But that's a false distinction between those two halves. But there is some truth in it, and I think Auden, when he kind of goes to America, September the 1st, 1939, is a kind of hangover from the 30s Auden, which is to say, it's a poem which tells people what to think, what to feel. We must love one another or die, of course, is one of the famous lines of the poem.
And the most notorious one, I was going to ask. that's the line he revises.
Yes, yes. So he changes it to, we must love, even worse, we must love one another and die, which just is a truism, just kind of, well, it's not a, even a truism, it's kind of, he's diluted a kind of oratorical kind of invitation to act in a particular way to a kind of half and half, isn't it? It's a kind of a truism that kind of hacked on to the end of something. What do they call it if you go to a cut and shunt? It's a cut and shunt. That's no good. And so he then thinks, well, do you know what? The whole poem, in his words, is infected. It's a bad poem. And I think
so it's an infected backwards.
It's a,
by that.
Yes.
It's dishonesty kind of
leaches through. It kind of, it infiltrates into every part of the poem, in a sense, because it's this is Auden kind of viewing things from a great height. Oh, I've got these insights into accurate scholarship can reveal all of this to us, and then these pronouncements about the common man or the average man, the sensual man in the street, all of this sort of stuff. And Auden, the later Auden, looks at this and thinks, do you know, I'm not really comfortable with that anymore, quite reasonably so. And because he liked to fiddle around, because he felt proprietorial over his, not all poets do, felt really proprietorial, he thought, do you know what, I'll have a go at that and change it, and I'll tinker with it. Oh, that doesn't work, now I'll get rid of it completely.
Do you share Randall Jarrell's view, which I have to confess I slightly share, that Auden almost never revised his poems and improved them? I think he buggered up Lullaby by turning carnal ecstasy into sensual ecstasy.
I think Jarrell is right about Auden almost across the board. Jarrell was one of these, so Randall Jarrell is one of these American poets who was a better reviewer of poetry than a writer of poetry himself, but his insights into kind of how poetry works and what poets do was really almost unsurpassed. He was completely brilliant at it. And you're quite right, he thought that Auden, in this kind of habit of his of revision, did bad always, and I think that's probably the case. Apart from, I'm trying to think of some examples. Well, when he changed, you know, when Orwell says to him, George Orwell reads the poem Spain, where Auden talks about the necessary murder, and Orwell says, writes about the poem, and he says, this is the kind of line that could only be written by someone who was never there when the trigger was pulled, or something like that. And he's quite right. So Auden changes that line. So he does occasionally make improvements in the face of other people's suggestions, but when he's doing it himself alone, I think that it's almost always bad.
Yeah, that necessary murder thing does touch on something. I don't know, it's a nagging feeling I have, and I think you allude to it a bit in the book. That sense that Auden, he loves a grand statement. He's got such prosodic ease and such rhetorical kind of natural excellence. Yeah.
He's a virtuoso.
He loves to be magniloquent, and he's... It sort of doesn't much matter. Love each other and die. Love each other or die. They scan the same. You know, there isn't anything profoundly invested in whether what he says is true.
Yeah.
I mean, is he? You know, he's kind of posing. He's kind of throwing a grand line out there. Do you feel that about him?
Yeah, and that's what troubled him, I think. He knew full well, and it must be. I wouldn't know. If you are truly blessed, if you are someone who's been kissed by the gods at birth and you have those kind of virtuosic skills and you can just do it, which Auden could. Now, he worked very hard, but at the same time, he was kind of preternaturally gifted. I would have thought then that you might come to despair of those gifts and talents a little bit, and I think Auden did, and you might become obsessed with thinking about writing about your ideas of truth and beauty and this sort of, hence his kind of obsession with people like Hannah Arendt and all of those theologians that he started reading when he went to America and kind of became slightly obsessed with, and kind of was always trying to show that he was a real intellectual, not just a kind of showman. I would have thought that might eat away at you, mightn't it?
Yeah. Do you?
Not that I know.
I mean, it seems a funny mismatch as well, because he's. You know, he is, as you say, certainly in the early half of his career, he is very political. He's expressly political. He's writing about, you know, maps can really point to places where life is evil now, you know, Nanking, Dachau. He's sort of interested in the world. But the vibe of the poems, quite often, you know, Auden Land doesn't feel very concrete, does it? It very often has that sort of, it wants to become a myth or a fairy tale or an abstraction.
Yes, well, he does have those kind of landscapes that are the landscapes of his childhood, limestone landscapes, and that sort of. So I think what you maybe have is a weird combination of the very detail, you know, the cigarette smouldering in the border, and I stand the crux left of the warship. That's that sort of really specific weird detail combined with this, as you say, this kind of mythic kind of wonderland, fairyland, and I think that's what makes that what puts the tension into the early poems and makes them exciting. And of course, maybe in some of the later poems, although some of the later poems are rather nicely specific about, you know, where he's living in Kirchstadt in Austria, he's got this little house with Chester Kallman, some of those poems I think are rather touching, and the poems about home and place. But the big kind of stuff in the middle, which is kind of abstracted, kind of let me open the top of my brain and show you what's in there, that's maybe less impressive in some way.
Yeah, you describe him somewhere as I'll find the reference because I was so struck by it. I think you mean it as a compliment.
I hope so.
Being a essentially a kind of belt-fed rubbish collector. Oh yes. One useful way of thinking about Auden's massive oeuvre, or at least one useful way I have of thinking about Auden's massive oeuvre, is to imagine it as a kind of depository fed by his extraordinary brush-equipped pickup belt of a brain.
Yes, but that's it, isn't it? It's just he sweeps everything in. I think Elizabeth Bishop described him as a kind of magpie, but it's not like. I mean, he's much more productive. It's much more weirdly efficient than that. That's just sweeping up of material again, and you know, he reads Freud, and lo and behold, boom! You get this massive sweep of Freud coming in.
Sounds like spelling fantasy with a PH.
Yes, all of that sort of thing, which is rather irritating actually, but nonetheless massively impressive. Where you get the sense of somebody able to kind of read something and then almost immediately kind of ingest it and then do something with it. That's really what Auden was capable of doing.
Now, in that same paragraph, you talk about, you say, you know, my own book, therefore, is something like a kind of mini-mart or a corner shop of W.H. Auden. I mean, there is a sense in the book of, I mean, I don't want to say sifting through the rubbish because that doesn't... Of engaging with this stuff as detritus.
Yeah.
Of, you know, just chucking a lot of things in. I mean, how did you kind of conceive the book? Because its major rhetorical figure would be Occultatio. You're always saying, you know, I think this. Actually, no, I think the opposite.
Yes.
This is what some people would say, but I'm not saying that.
Or yes.
I think probably about, you might have made a count, about 30% of the book is actually in parentheses.
Mm.
You know, did you just start and find its form like that, or was there a design in mind?
Part of me was trying to imitate this, come up with my own version of Auden's essay style. When you read Auden's prose, the prose is as impressive as the poetry. And he was a brilliant writer of occasional pieces, and I tried to find a way of kind of writing my own version of his attempt to encompass everything and write about everything and include everything. And I maybe struggled to do so, but one of the ways, you're absolutely right, in which I found I could, was to do it in a kind of, on the one hand, on the other hand, styly, which is not, you know, that's not particularly innovative, but it allowed me to say things that I wouldn't otherwise have been able to say. And I think it also allowed me to admit that although the book contains close readings of the poem and other poems, it's not a scholarly work. And I think part...
You spend a lot of chapter dissociating yourself, or at least doing a sort of I am not worthy,
yes,
vis-a-vis scholarship. You know,
I think that's partly because I think one of the things that happens to one is if you... as I did, went to university and you start to then read great poems and you've exposed to great art and literature, I think there's the idea that this somehow is necessarily uplifting and a good thing. And in fact, I, and I'm sure, surely others, find it as simultaneously extremely depressing, because you think, oh, gosh, bloody hell, look at that, that's incredible. And you feel, it's like going into a cathedral. You feel necessarily rather worm-like at the end of it.
I mean, there is a thread through it. I mean, it reminds me slightly, and I don't know whether this book was on your mind when you were writing it, of Jeff Dyer's Out of Sheer Rage,
right,
which is a book about trying and failing to write a book about D.H. Lawrence.
Yes.
I mean, was there that vibe for you?
There's maybe more of Jeff Dyer in Jeff Dyer than there is of me in this, I would think. But yes, but I do rather admire books that take a bit of a swerve. I do like a swerve. And Jeff Dyer is a great swerver around Lawrence in that book. But there are, I suppose, other kind of scholarly or kind of sub-scholarly models for that. I'm trying to think off the... I mean, the Ian Hamilton book about Salinger, for example. You know, how do you write a book about... Well, as it turns out, you can't. So what you do is you write a book about not writing a book about that sort of thing. I always thought that was rather... I mean, perhaps it's whimsical, perhaps it's irritating, but that's one mode of approaching a subject slant-wise.
Yeah.
As Emily Dickinson might have it.
Tell it slant.
Yes.
Speaking of slant-wise, you spend a bit of time saying, you know, the eye in a poem is not to be trusted, is the eye in this poem Auden? Hmm. And then you sort of have a whole section, I think, that says, yes, it's Auden. Yeah. Is the eye in this book you?
Well, no more so than any written eye. It's clearly not. But at the same time, it might be a vague approximation. So... insofar as there is material contained in the book which indicates certain facts about me as a person, some of those facts are indeed true.
Which are the bits in the poem that you like? I mean, you said you don't like the Vatic kind of oratorical bossy mode.
I like, as with all poems... I admire the audacity of the whole thing. It is massively... I like the fact that, you know, it begins, I sit in one of the dives on 52nd Street. And the reason I like that is because, in a sense, that's Auden showing off right at the beginning, because he's writing this... He's gone to America. Everyone's gone, oh, Auden's going to America. He's deserting us, you know, and this is awful. And then I sit in one of the dives on 52nd Street. Strikes me as being a bit like a postcard that you receive from someone who says, hey guys, having a great time over. Do you know, it's got that kind of grandstanding to it. But at the same time, I sit, he's coming down, at the same time he's trying to lower himself down to be on the same level as you. So all of those things are going on at the same time. I think that's what I love in Auden, is that you've got the high and the low. You've got, I'm up high looking down at you, common man, average person. But then he's able actually to come down to that level as well. That is bloody impressive to be able to do that. People who can do that are very, very rare. I don't think Eliot could do it. I don't think Pound could do it, for example.
Yeah. It's also formally, we should just talk about that, one of the reasons it took off on 9/11, or when the unmentionable odour of death obviously had something to do with that and the New Yorkie theme, but it's 11 stanzas of 9 lines each. 9 lines, 9 stanzas of 11 lines?
That's 11 it,
stanzas
9 of 9 11.
Lines. 9 of 11, yes.
Yes. 99 lines.
99 lines, and each a single unit of thought, a single
Brilliant.
Sentence, isn't it?
Oh, that's, again, massively, as a form, you read it and you just think, wow. You do. I mean, I think at the start that I just say, wow. Because each, as you rightly say, each stanza is a unit of thought, and it kind of builds and builds and builds. And kind of as a piece of work. And Auden was obsessed with ideas of work. You know, I'm labouring away at my poems. He saw that as a form of work. And as a piece of work, it is very impressive. In craftsmanship.
Yeah. I mean, didn't he as a young man say, you know, determine he set himself exercises to write 1,000 words or equivalent in verse every single day?
Well, he may. It's exactly the sort of thing he would have done. He saw it as a kind of vocation, for sure. Yeah.
And... I was intrigued by something you wrote in the book as well about thinking of him in terms of crime writing, which is another thing, you know, that you both read a lot of crime novels and do. And you said he always opens strongly and ends strongly. He is a great punchline poet, isn't he?
Yes. And that is, again, wherein lies his strength, therein lies his weakness. And that's what, and he knew it. He knew that he calls poetry famously memorable speech. He knew that you had to come up with that kind of, there's zingers in Auden. That's why people return to Auden. That's why after 9/11, for example, I think people come to Auden, people return to this poem again and again, because it seems to offer quite easy answers to very, very complex questions or problems. And that's, again, Auden could do it, and he was suspicious of himself for being able to do that, and rightly so. But yes, that kind of ability to kind of, end, you know, may I, like them, composed of Eros and of Dust, show an affirming flame. To, you know, it's like jazz hands. It's, in a sense, it's magnificent, but it's terrible at the same time. It makes you feel pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah. Other Auden poems you would want to light on? If you got the chance to do the same, would you go through, I don't know, Lullaby or The Fall of Rome or...
I'd probably do The Sea and the Mirror, but I think it's one of the great poems, you know... It's the four quartets that nobody talks about. It's the cantos that nobody writes about. Because it's a complex, very, very complex poem. So I'd probably have a crack at that, but I'm not going to live long enough to do that. That's it, I'm done.
You're done with Auden.
I'm done with Auden. When I finished, it did feel like a kind of escape. It did feel like a kind of escape, having been really enthralled to Auden for really my whole, since I was a teenager. Not that I started reading Auden then, but kind of becoming interested in poetry and trying to think about it and work out how to write about it. How might someone like me, an ordinary bloke, end up writing about poetry in a way that seemed real, if you like, to my own lived? How could I report, kind of on in Auden's words, from In Memory of W.B. Yeats, how the works of a poem or a writer were modified in the guts of the living? How did that work for me? And that book was my attempt to do that. I've got no more. There's no modification in my guts going on.
I'm glad to hear it. We're in a relatively small room. How has Auden himself overall, do you think, been modified in the guts of the living? Because as you write early on in the book, you know, there was, I think somebody, was it McNeice, writes to him and says, look, I haven't got time to write your long letter, so let's just take it for granted you're important. Mm. And, you know, it was the age of Auden. You know, in the 30s, he was kind of blotted out of the sky.
Yeah. Yes.
Has his reputation kind of held up, do you think? I mean, do you think people think of Auden now? I mean, as you say, there have been these bounces for individual anthology pieces.
I think his reputations, literary reputations, are often very perplexing to try and work out how, you know, how do they work? Where have they come from? Where will they go next? And Auden is no exception to that. He's certainly someone who's had something of a roller coaster ride. I think certainly when he went to America and then he becomes an American citizen, people kind of, someone like Larkin becomes very sniffy about Auden, where it's that, you know, he's doing something very different. And I think that sort of sense of Auden having kind of deserted his homeland and gone and become this kind of minor Atlantic Goethe was a sense that kind of hung around him for a long time. But
you point out, don't you, that Eliot gets claimed by anthologies on both sides, yes, of the Atlantic, and Auden gets the opposite. He's, yes, neither nor.
And that's odd, isn't it? I think that is odd. And so I think as his reputation at the moment, I don't know. I couldn't say. But certainly he doesn't seem to figure as a significant a writer as I think he probably is compared to some of the other kind of poets that we might write about or speak about. I mean, he's done okay, let's be honest, but he's
still in print. You can still get a book about one of his poems.
We are. So reputations, I don't know.
Do you think, I mean, just out of curiosity, might have crossed your mind, what do you ever think about what Auden would have made of your book? Do you think he'd have liked it?
For a long time, as I start, because I'd amassed all of this stuff about Auden over years and kind of read everything and read every article I could get my hands on over decades, I would sometimes begin to have kind of imaginary conversations with Auden in my mind, as you would, it's perfectly normal. It's the same as if you're into tennis, you think, oh, there's me playing Roger Federer. You know, what would it be like? That sort of thing. So I have to admit, I have had those imaginary conversations with Auden in my mind. I don't think he would be that impressed, to be honest. I think, in fairness, he would know the difference between a guru and a disciple. So...
Well, he could at the very least be grateful because it's a terrifically entertaining and interesting book. Ian Sanderson, thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. I want to let you know, too, about an upcoming event where I'll be talking to Robert Harris about his new novel, The Second Sleep, for a live recording of this podcast. The event takes place on Wednesday, the 23rd of October, at the Emanuel Centre in Westminster. You can get tickets at spectator.co.uk/events. I very much hope you'll come and join us.